Here's an easy way to think about it. Apple did not conspire to fix the prices of ebooks. At least, that's how their lead counsel puts it in the closing arguments in the long-running Apple price-fixing trial that ended just yesterday, Thursday. And we want to talk all about that with the man who was in court. Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, joins us now on Beyond the Book. Andrew, welcome back.
Greetings, Chris, and I apologize if I sound terrible, but at the end of this long trial, of course, I'm down with a cold.
Well, that's understandable, but we should tell people that you are also somebody who is now something of a best-selling author. Earlier this week, Publishers Weekly published its first ebook in partnership with Vook, and it's called The Battle of $9.99, How Apple, Amazon, and the Big Six Publishers Changed the Ebook Business Overnight. And we'll talk about it more in just a minute, but I understand it's doing rather well for a book out only a week.
Yeah, and surprisingly, for a topic that some might think is a little inside baseball, it's getting pretty wide traction, I think, no doubt, in connection with the news of Apple's price-fixing trial.
Right. Well, I mean, it's got so many great players and so many great themes in it. We've got Apple, we've got the book business, we've got, you know, the old versus the new. So there's a lot there to engage people. But before we get into the book, let's talk about what happened in court this week. And just yesterday, Thursday, we're talking with Albanese on Friday, June 21st. Just yesterday, the closing arguments were starting with lead counsel for Apple, Oren Snyder.
That's right. Or was first up. That's the convention of the court and the closing arguments. And as you mentioned in your intro, he basically said not conspire to fix prices. And you know, Snyder did a great job defending Apple throughout this entire proceeding. But he had a pretty high hill to climb. Basically, he had to convince the judge that this is not a pro se case of price fixing. Now, a pro se case is a violation that is so clear, a violation of the Antitrust Act that is so clear that it precludes the court from considering any possible business justifications. For example, Amazon using below-cost ebooks to foreclose competition in the ebook market and to cement its dominant position in disintermediate publishers. None of that would be able to be even considered by the judge if she found there was a obvious plan here to raise the prices of ebooks. So Snyder actually got off right away and vigorously defended Apple, and about a minute into his, maybe 2 minutes into his opening arguments, Judge Coates interrupted him. And she asked him a direct question. Did Apple think that the publishers had colluded? And I have to say, he did not throw publishers under the bus like he might have. Now, throughout the trial, he had sort of put some distance between Apple and the publisher, saying that, you know, kind of, if there was a conspiracy, hey, it wasn't ours. We had no knowledge of what they were doing. But he resisted the temptation to throw them under the bus, and instead, he didn't stand behind them either, I should say. He basically said that Apple had no position. But I think the Coates question clearly raised the idea in the minds of observers that Judge Coates has an idea that there was something that caused ebooks to spike in early 2010.
Well, indeed. And there's obviously the other side of things. And of course, in those closing arguments, the U.S. Attorney Mark Ryan made an equally strong counter argument. And his point is that, it's really not about the benefits of all of this, whether this was good for the consumer or bad for the consumer. The fact was prices were set.
That's exactly right. I think the DOJ has a pretty strong case here. Their case is for free markets. Basically, he countered Oren Snyder's closing arguments by saying the evidence was overwhelming that there was some coordination, that there was some collusion, and that Apple was in the middle of it in a scheme to raise the price of ebooks. And certainly the evidence shows that in spring of 2010, ebooks did suddenly rise. And that wasn't necessarily just the product of good old-fashioned robust competition. Now, interestingly, in Snyder's arguments, when he was defending Apple, he pointed out that it wasn't the $9.99 prices that Apple was seeking to address. What they were seeking to address was the unavailability of books, of ebooks, because the major publishers, in response to Amazon, had already decided to window their books, that is to delay their releases. And they were delaying their big bestsellers, at least four of the publishers were anyway. They were delaying their big bestsellers. And he used Sarah Palin's Going Rogue as an example at this time. HarperCollins was not making that available as an ebook because they wanted to protect their hardcover sales. So the de facto position for Apple was that they weren't raising prices for $9.99. They were devising a way to make ebooks available. But Ryan countered that very effectively by saying, hey, if windowing was the de facto position of the industry, competition should sort that out. Free markets have a way of serving, of taking care of their own business, and free markets have a way of serving consumers. So it was an interesting argument by Apple and a very strong counter by the DOJ.
Right, and interesting too regarding this notion of conspiracy and what actually qualifies as a conspiracy. And one of the aspects of that would have been the kind of contract that Apple would have looked for. And there are various sort of really inside baseball terms, we can talk about all agency and most favored nations and so forth. But Ryan, the Department of Justice attorney, really took that on, and he noted that the expectations that Apple would have expected contract provisions explicitly sort of articulating the nature of the conspiracy, that's ridiculous. That would have been very high risk. Nevertheless, Apple was able to suggest things which the publishers then picked up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think what it boils down to for the DOJ and to some extent for Apple, how they actually got these deals done. As you recall, Apple had originally proposed an all-agency idea, that all publishers have to move to agency. But as you know, that would have been a very high-risk plan. So eventually they replaced that with their MFN, which is the price parity clause, the most favored nations clause, which allowed them to match the low price of any other bookseller out there. And this, the DOJ argued, was a very elegant way of making sure that publishers, once they had floated the idea of all-agency to publishers, this was a way of actually getting publishers to do it without explicitly putting it into a contract and drawing the scrutiny of antitrust regulators. If that sounds a little too devious, it's actually pretty plausible. And one of the things that came out during the trial was that Apple attorneys, their counsel, had never worked on drafting a clause for their contracts that would have required publishers to move their accounts to all agency. In fact, they had worked on the MFN going back as early as December, mid-December, or at least very early, or excuse me, late December. And this precluded, this was way before Eddie Q, Apple's senior vice president, said he had his realization that the all-agency idea was flawed and that they needed something else to make this work. So there is definitely some tension there about whether or not Apple schemed to sort of float this idea that you have to move everyone to all-agency, but then came up with a more elegant contract term to sort of make sure the publishers did it.
Well, it all gets pretty cute, and it's up to the judge to determine just how cute it all was and how conspiratorial it all was. So we've had 2 years of legal maneuvering, we've had 3 or 4 weeks of trial, and everything is now in the hands of federal judge Denise Coate. And so with everything shut down, it's really up to her, and how soon can we expect to hear from the judge? And any speculation? It's speculation, but can you guess at the kinds of things she's going to want to touch on beyond whether or not there was the conspiracy?
Yes. So I do think we're going to see a ruling fairly quickly here. Now, is it going to be in 2 weeks? Now, she did say at one point that she thought she could get a written opinion out in 2 to 4 weeks. She's been working on this written opinion for some time now. And she set very strict rules in her courtroom with the party's agreement and with the party's pushing, because they did want to get a verdict out pretty quickly here. It's time for everybody to move on, I think, after two years of wrangling over this. So I would expect that we would see a verdict here sometime in the next 2 to 4 weeks. Now, that verdict is going to be interesting. Apple clearly has a high mountain to climb, but they could win. And if they win, they're going to, of course, trumpet their innocence. But also in that verdict, we're going to see something about the publisher's conduct. Judge Coate is going to rule on whether or not she thinks publishers engaged in some collusion. I think that is absolutely going to be part of this decision. So even if Apple wins, it doesn't necessarily mean that publishers lose, or excuse me, that publishers win. Publishers could still be in Coates' written opinion, could still be basically accused and convicted, I should say, of price fixing. But at the same time, I think it's fair to say that publishers have kind of won here because they settled early on with this. And now they're out of this. They're, for them, they don't have to wait for the verdict. Their legal fate is known. They're settled, and it's all over but the refunds for them. So they don't have to worry about any more testimony or any of this stuff. It's time for them to move on. I'm sure they're all very grateful for this. But at the same time, the settlements that they engaged into, which include about $175 million worth of credits for ebooks, it's all going to start flowing back to them. Almost like a court-ordered promotion for them, because the 25 credits for bestsellers are going to start flowing into ebook consumers' accounts. And hey, who knows? While they go to execute that $1.25 credit, maybe they'll buy two books. Maybe they'll buy three books. Hey, why not? So I think that in the next year, as these credits start flowing out, that there's actually going to be some benefit to publishers.
Well, it's interesting, and we started this trial with the judge all but declaring her intention to find everybody guilty. There was a turn in that this week, early in the week, and we are left with not quite as clear a case as we thought we were at the start.
Yeah, at the end of Wednesday's testimony, before the closing arguments on Thursday, Judge Koh, in the very final moments of the trial, did say that she thought the issues had shifted somewhat, as usually happens in trials, as you would expect to happen in a trial. Now, whether or not that constitutes, Apple gaining leverage, or at the very least, Apple attorneys were very happy to have sort of reversed the initial tentative view. And I was walking out with some of the Apple team, and one of the people working with the Apple defense team, I said, "Hey, just were those the words you were waiting to hear?" And there was just this broad, broad smile. "I think we're good." It was the response.
Well, something for Apple to smile on as they head back to Cupertino. Andrew Albanese, we should tell people, because we talked a little bit more about this new book of yours, The Battle of $9.99, How Apple, Amazon, and the Big Six Publishers Changed the Ebook Business Overnight. And you've based the reporting in this book, which is available on Amazon and elsewhere, on the court documents and the trial testimony. I've read it myself. It's a great primer for anybody who cares about this case. And you tell me you've been surprised by the response. It's up there in the bestseller territory, which gives us an indication of just how interested the public is in this.
Yeah, I am surprised that it's up in the bestseller territory right now. We'll see if it hangs there as the case winds down. But I started writing this at night as I was reading these documents. And I've read hundreds, if not thousands, of pages of court documents. And most of this stuff was filed before the trial. I started working on this project sort of as a little nighttime exercise right around the end of May, right after the last pretrial conference. I think that was on May 23rd. And it was just an exercise for me to understand the game plan going into trial. But as I started reading these documents, I was like, boy, there is a really good narrative here. If only I could just crack the nut, because nobody wants to read 1,000 pages of court documents to find out what happened. And the other part of this is that no journalist would ever get this close to the principals and Amazon and Apple and the CEOs of the Big Six without subpoena power. And, I'm never going to have subpoena power in my life. And these guys are never going to talk about their business models to the press. They just aren't. But here it was. Here was this trove of information, this trove of facts and conclusions that both sides had laid out. So what I endeavored to do was to just take the facts and conclusions, to take the testimony, use the evidence that was submitted as exhibits in trial, and weave it together into a narrative people could actually follow, so that they would have some background to understand what the problem was, how we wound up in this trial. Now, I should also add, I take no position on guilt or innocence, and after sitting through the trial myself for the full duration, I'm still not sure of how I feel about this or how the case should go.
Well, we'll all be interested to get the verdict from the judge, but in the meantime, we can get your book, which is, interestingly, it's available from Amazon, from Apple, from Barnes & Noble, and direct from Vook, the publisher. And we do suggest that folks dig into their pockets for the $1.99 and get Andrew Albanese's book, The Battle of $9.99. Andrew Albanese, thank you so much for joining us today on Beyond the Book. Senior writer for Publishers Weekly joins us every Friday with the latest in publishing industry news.
Thank you, Chris.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.